This is a Cyber Union talk show for Monday, November 21st, 2011. Sparks are flying and it's not even May 1st yet.
Hello and welcome to Cyber Unions. I'm Walton in Glasgow, Scotland, and with me is...
Stephen in still occupied Boston, Massachusetts. Temporarily.
Hey Stephen, how are you? How's it going in occupied Boston?
It's going well. It's going very well. In fact, what's one exciting thing that kind of connects back to where you are today is that for once, there's an actual real football, and by means soccer, on TV here. The Chelsea versus Liverpool game is gonna be on the TV here, which is kind of exciting. So I'll be rooting for Liverpool, of course. Chelsea, from what I've been told and from what I understand, is a lot like the Yankees. So we don't like the Yankees in this part. So it should be exciting.
So we need to wrap the show up quickly so you can go and watch football.
Yes. Let's do it in 5 minutes. No.
All right.
No. Other than that, it's been pretty exciting. You know, it's funny. The last couple shows, we haven't had the video working on my side, and I thought it was a major hardware error, and it turned out to be a user error. I, by mistake, hit FN F10. And that turned off my camera, and I had no idea I did that at one point. So we're working with video again.
Yeah. So in other words, a technical error between the keyboard and the chair.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So, which is just me, but
it's good to be able to see you again.
Yeah. I haven't changed too much. My beard is actually trimmed instead of grown out, but it'll grow longer when I get down to Guatemala. But the other cool thing
that's pretty soon, isn't it? When are you going to Guatemala?
A week from Tuesday. So after the show is posted, it'll be a week from basically almost a week from that point that I'll be flying out, and I don't know when I'll have connection to the internet again. So it'll be some time. So hopefully not too long. Hopefully we'll be able to keep our shows going no matter what, whether I'm here or not. But yeah, it's coming up. It's exciting and nerve wracking, and still trying to get rid of a lot of stuff in the house. So. And trying to get some tech stuff done too before I get there, because I want to make sure I can get this internet cafe going. But yeah, so it's coming around the corner. It's gonna start freaking me out, and I'm gonna be losing it soon. So things to look forward to. But the other thing, in kind of in a similar light, because I'm glad I actually got in touch with them, is May 1st, which I think we've talked about a bit here.
Mm-hmm.
I've become a member, and with it, I actually got the chance to start trying to move our site over to their servers, because they offer much more expandable, no bandwidth limits, which we've been running into as a constant problem. Not that that's a problem, because you know, we're happy that people keep coming to our site. But I had a chance to actually work with some of their support people and members in their IRC that were really helpful in trying to get things transitioned over and learn how to do SSHing to a server in the back end, and look at how to install WordPress on the back end, which was kind of cool. So I think I'll talk about that a little bit more later, but
Good. Okay, yeah.
So what have you been up to? What has been going on in the UK?
Lots of preparation for all sorts of industrial action is what's happening here. Our union balloted for industrial action on the 30th of November, and there was a kind of 2/3 majority of people voted in favor of striking. So that strike is ahead. And then also, I spent yesterday, Saturday, running around Glasgow with a video camera, filming the Sparks protest. That's the electrical construction workers, and I'll tell you more about that later as well. But it was a interesting day filming the protest for the Unite website. So
nice.
That's what I've been up to.
Protests are always good things to cover, especially as a union advocate, you know. If they're not happening, and then there's something, there must be a problem, right?
do you want to, I'm quite intrigued about this whole May 1st model, and also the way you've been doing the stuff on the through the IRC. Can you kind of tell me a bit more about what you've learned, what you've experienced, what's been going on there?
Certainly. It was actually really cool. I got the membership going, and they have a number of different ways you can actually pay for it, because it's a $100 membership for the year, which is really cool. But you get all these benefits of server space, your own virtual server to have SSH access to it, and you can do what you want. The thing is, I don't know what I can do. So after I got the membership up and my account going, they invited me to the IRC, which I had known the IRC channel on there anyhow, and jumped into it and spent a good half a day just working with trying to back up the site from our current host, which is trick.ca, and trying to get all the content over to May 1st so we could start putting the site together, because it's literally just a vanilla server. You have really nothing installed yet. So we went and they took me through the steps of downloading the most recent version of WordPress to get it going through SSH and bringing it over and installing it, and then downloading all our content from the site, which I ended up doing FTP, which I haven't done that since like 1994, I think. Last time I used anything with an FTP application. And so downloaded all that, then uploaded it to the server, and pretty quickly they were very helpful in getting me through the process, and I was able to log in through the Cyber Union's web May 1st server site, which I think you noticed when you were just checking the link throughs or the click throughs or search or whatever the originating sources to our site. But so it looks good. It's not as up to date right now because it doesn't have our most recent content that we have up there, but transitioning over shouldn't be that hard actually at this point, which is kind of cool. It'll be interesting once we get it there completely. May 1st is their support is really cool because it's a lot of volunteers in the IRC and they're very patient. And what I really liked is that, you know, I'm tech savvy to a point. Running a server is never something I've done. So they were really helpful. Just they take you at whatever level you're at. They don't they don't assume that you know anything to a certain extent. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just that they're not going to treat you like a like being very condescending or anything like that. So their support is very supportive and constructive. And I learned a lot. Some of it went in one ear and went out the other. But I figure with practice and at least I have contacts that I can refer back to will be helpful in trying to figure this out.
Well, that sounds fantastic. That really sounds good.
Yeah, it should be. And it'll be fun when we finally officially bring it over there and not have to deal with bandwidth issues that we keep running into. But it'll be fun. And there's flexibility on trying to get other things in there. Like if we wanted to ask for, as members, we can ask for and request things such as like putting StatusNet onto the site or Diaspora. And things like that. So these are things that give us some flexibility in some of the things that we wanted to test out, depending on what their resources are. But of course, you know, with more members and everything else like that, it's good. And it's a good site. There are a lot of unions, actually, that have been using the site, which is kind of cool. And their two part-time staff are union members themselves. So that was the first thing they sent me I got my welcoming package.
Oh, fantastic. That's good. Yeah,
so
it's something I wanted to ask you about. Every time I log onto a website in the past week or so, I've seen something saying stop SOPA, stop censorship. It's been on Tumblr. It's been all over Reddit. It's been on Diaspora. There's all these suggestions of censorship. And I know that SOPA is the Stop Online Piracy Act. Do you know anything about that? It's a new law that's going through in the US, or what exactly is it?
Yeah, it's going through our legislative bodies right now, and it's not a good thing. I mean, it's kind of coincides with our talk with David Rovics when we're talking about Creative Commons and copyright stuff, because Creative Commons is a copyright material, but it flips it and makes it copy left. So that you can share it and not have to be concerned about it. But this is kind of making it much harder to actually post material, because if you if you post any material that's copywritten by somebody else, and if you're not aware of the copyright, this law, if it were to pass, would allow penalties of like prison for 5 years for posting any copywritten material. And if you have a YouTube account, like most people that have them have posted things that have been copyright material, and it usually gets taken down. Well, this kind of makes it seem like, well, if you do that, then you could actually you could end up in jail instead of just having your account taken down. It's raising the levels on the concerns of what happens with your activities on the internet, and it's not giving any real process to it. It's just creating penalties, and it's like the stupid laws in that. You know, if you heighten the penalty, then people aren't going to do it. Like, they've heightened the, not that I'm having a huge discussion on this one, but you know, they heighten the level of, like, if you kill somebody, you know, then you're going to be killed. That doesn't actually deter anybody from actually doing it. That's the problem. Raising the level on penalties of copyrighted material, which is a whole questionable thing to begin with, isn't really going to prevent people, because it's not easily informed. You don't know exactly what copyrights are, and it's much harder to read, which is why I like Creative Commons mm-hmm. is because it's easier to understand it. But mm-hmm. it's a big thing that's going to affect a lot of things that you post to social media, that you post on for people who have Facebook accounts. It creates a real fear, and it's not a good thing to – it's not constructive to civil society, and it's not, I don't think, helpful.
Mm.
Especially when – I don't know. It's especially when there's more push to make things more available and easier for people to contribute to, and copyright doesn't do that, and this law makes it much harsher.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like it's another great big attempt to shift the way the internet works in favor of big corporations, and particularly the old corporations, the kind of people who haven't adjusted their business models to deal with the information age. Are using kind of laws like this to try and maintain a business model which was never particularly fair or ethical, and which is definitely outdated.
Yeah.
I noticed that there seems to be a bit of a conflict between different branches of capital, because a lot of the tech companies don't like this because it's illegal to even link to something. So that means, if I'm reading it correctly, it sounds like if someone posts something on Twitter which is a link to copyright material, Twitter is potentially liable for having that on their site. And it kind of negates the whole point of social media and user-generated content, because suddenly the organization or the company that owns that site becomes responsible for what's hosted on it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it doesn't sound good.
No. And I mean, and there's a growing support against the bill. In fact, if you go onto Diaspora, there's a direct link to, you know, Stop Censorship, and it goes to AmericanCensorship.org, which we'll put a link in the show notes, of course. But the amount of organizations that are behind it, it's like from Mozilla, makers of Firefox, to the Free Software Foundation, to the EFF, and just so many different organizations, and Wikimedia for Wikipedia, and they just realize that, you know, this is not going to help, because it's going to prevent mm-hmm. innovation. It's going to put so much into the legal cases of all this other crap. And it goes back to even, like, you know, the music, and that's where it comes from, I think, originally, is like sharing music. And, you know, if you share copyrighted music, you know, even if the musician doesn't care, the record industry is going to, you know, file suit and hold you liable. And it's just like, what kind of society do we want to have? Do we want to have where we have to be constantly feared what we post? You know, we understand their laws and everything like that, and I'm not trying to avert the laws or anything like that, but there needs to be some flexibility here, and there needs to be some way that the material can be up there and not have to be concerned if it's a violation. Then instead of, you know, bringing these, you know, 5-year sentences and fines and everything else, it's a whole different process, and it's, I don't know, I just don't think it's constructive.
It just makes me think of the war on drugs, you know, which this really draconian way of cracking down on drug use, it hasn't, you know, all it's done is criminalized a whole bunch of people, and I guess it's the same type of thing. It doesn't understand the roots of the situation, doesn't try to solve them, just uses laws to try and bash everyone with.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing, is that's what they're trying to do. It's just, as you said, you know, it gives more power to corporations and less power to the people, and that's not exactly what we're advocating here. You know, we want more power to the people and less power to the corporations. I think they've gotten away with enough. They've been making their monies, and they don't need to be worried about this. And if the musicians are hurt, you know, they got to rework their contracts that they're having with the record industries in the first place. And I think if one thing we learned from David last week is that there is a way to be successful without relying on a record industry and the record companies mm-hmm. themselves. And he's found a way, which means that, and many other people can find their way. And, you know, so big label bands out there don't win, so be it. They're already making millions to begin with, so I don't feel bad for them.
No.
I don't feel bad for the corporations that may be losing some of their profit revenues and everything else. So I mean, that's what's going on. We'll put a link in the show notes, and I think, you know, we're supporting the you know, stop the censorship as cyber unions itself, and we'll put some information up there for people to read that are not too familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of it on the tech side of things here, Walton. I'd be really interested to hear a lot more about what's going on with Sparks, if you would like to elaborate on that.
We are the Sparks! We are the Sparks! We are, we are, we are the Sparks! We are the Sparks! We are the Sparks! We are, we are, we are the Sparks!
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you and the listeners about two things, and there's two big disputes going on at the moment, two big industrial disputes. And the one that's in the news all the time is the public sector strike on the 30th of November, which is going ahead because a whole bunch of unions have been balloted and they've all, almost all of them voted in favor of the strike. And so I think it's probably 24 unions who will be striking, and probably around 1.5 million workers will be striking on the 30th of November, which will make it the biggest strike since the general strike of 1926. So it's pretty significant. It's public sector workers. Well, it's people who are in a public sector pension scheme. So it also includes people who are not in the public sector, but they mm-hmm. work somewhere that used to be public sector when they enter the pension scheme or whatever it is. But it's a significant number of people. And many of them are people I know. Like I was at a dinner party last night, and two of the people there were teachers, and they were talking about why they were striking and how much worse their terms and conditions, excuse me, how much worse their terms and conditions are getting. It's bin men, teachers, nurses. It's a huge, huge, huge part of society, and it's a significant showdown with a government which is driving through austerity quite dramatically. So it's very important that the strike is successful. And I know people are worried about it because the last big showdown with a conservative government was 1984 with the miners' strike, and unions have never recovered from that. So it's really important that this strike goes well. But as you know, and as we've spoken about on the show before, one of the things which really restricts industrial action is the laws around it. It's really, really restrictive. And I think that you're not really going to be able to take on the government and employers really successfully if you stick to the strictly legal stuff. And that's why I think one of the most interesting disputes that's happening at the moment is the Sparks dispute. It's underreported. There's not a huge amount in the media about it. But basically what it is, Sparks are electrical construction workers. They do the electrical work in construction sites. And there's loads of construction happening at the moment. Here in Glasgow, we've got the Commonwealth Games in 2014. So they're building, a velodrome and a bunch of stuff for that. Mm-hmm. There's a big building in London called the Shard, which is going up. There's stuff for the London Olympics. There's a number of really, really important construction contracts. And what's happened is that construction terms and conditions are governed by national agreements. Most famously, the agreement that's called NECI. It stands for National Agreement for the Electrical Construction Industry. And the signatories are the big employers and the unions who operate in that sector. Some of the employers tried to break that agreement in 2009 at an oil refinery called Lindsay. And it led to wildcat strikes across the UK, both at that refinery and at other sites. There's been another assault on national agreements by seven of the biggest employers in the construction industry, led by Balfour Beatty. And essentially what they're trying to do is break that agreement and get the workers to agree to an average of about 30% lower wages.
Whoa.
Now, this is the same Balfour Beatty which I think increased their profits by 32% in 2010. So it's not like, the sector has collapsed and the company's in trouble or anything like that. It's a purely opportunistic thing where they think that the political climate is right for an assault on the workforce. And the thing that drives me mad is about how, I think it's Karl Marx called capitalists a hostile band of brothers, and how they act against their own interest, because it's in the interest of Balfour Beatty to drive down wages because they'll save money. But the problem is Balfour Beatty's workers or someone else's customers. So if suddenly, thousands of people across the UK are earning 30% less, then that's a whole lot less money that those people have got to spend in, everywhere else that the economy relies on. And this wage contraction that we're seeing is really just going to throw the country a lot deeper into recession. It's one of the reasons for the recession in the first place, is because no one had any money to spend because of the wages being repressed for a generation. And, that difference was made up by the extension of credit. And when the credit crunch happened and that credit collapsed, suddenly kind of everything fell apart. And the best thing you can do, you know, and this is something you kind of need to challenge the capitalists with, is that the best thing that they can do if they want to save capitalism is have strong trade unions and pay people properly. Because then at least people will be able to afford the stuff that is made and, you know, be able to buy houses and do all of that. It's the kind of systematic looting that we're seeing from the rich is really hard to believe that they can think that they can get away with it. Because the bankers have been doing it, and now it's the big construction companies. Anyway, the Sparks are not having it. So there've been these wildcat strikes happening all over the place. There's a rank and file union movement called the National Shop Stewards Network, and I think they've been doing a lot of the coordinating of the wildcat action. I think it was 9th of November, so a week ago, there was a Sparks demo in London, and they essentially marched through the city from one construction site to the other and used loud hailers to call the guys out, you know, one out, all out, call everyone out, got sites closed down, and then got these, you know, as the crowd got bigger and bigger, they kind of marched to more construction sites and closed them down. There was a big student demonstration the same day. They attempted to join it. The police wouldn't let them, so they ended up joining up with Occupy. Yeah, and on Saturday...
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Because the Sparks are members of our union, so on Saturday they had a demonstration. I went to film it for the union website, and I'll put a link to the video. But the cool thing was that Glasgow Occupy joined them and kind of marched with them, and one of the guys from Glasgow Occupy spoke at the end. So it's very, very interesting seeing the kind of these grassroots movements of activists coming together and supporting each other. I'm quite hopeful, actually, that, you know, I feel like despite all the terrible things that are happening and the kind of looting of the world's wealth by the rich, I think there's an unprecedented coming together of, I don't think I've ever seen before, such an international movement where it's everywhere from Yemen and Syria to Wall Street to Glasgow to, you know, the whole world is involved in some kind of uprising against elites and against, you know, lack of democracy and people's futures being looted from them. So I think it's very interesting times.
It is. And it's actually getting concerning, very concerning too, because there's been a lot of actions that have been happening, at least here in the States, against the Occupy movements. And the Occupy Wall Street down in New York got evicted from Zuccotti Park, which isn't actually public land. It's actually private land that's like administered by the police. So the police have the right to kick people out. But they kicked them out because of public safety concerns of cleaning it. And that's something that could have been dealt by working with that community that's at Occupy instead of kicking them out, taking all their tents, throwing their tents away, which is exactly the same thing that happened when in Occupy Boston tried to expand. They took the tents and just threw them in the trash. And they literally took a library and books and threw them into the trash or dump trucks themselves. And there's been a lot of actions that have been fighting it, but it's in a lot of cases that the more the actions are against Occupy, I feel the stronger the movement becomes, because there's a bigger call to action. And the second it happened in New York, the first thing that happened is the labor unions in New York called for a march, and they marched against Bloomberg on it. And there's opportunity, and I think that's the thing here. And I think
Bloomberg came out of that looking like Berlusconi or Mubarak or someone like that. You know, I think the actions are so disproportionate that powerful people are isolating themselves.
Yeah, well, that's very true, and it keeps showing that the police are ending up protecting the 1% or whatever we want to call it. What I like is, at least I've been seeing postings for it, is like, you know when a riot's going to happen based on what people are wearing, and it's all photos of cops with riot gear, because the people at Occupy movements are linking arms and they're being nonviolent, and there's nothing they're doing to instigate the situation. It's the cops that are acting under the request of the mayor and everything else, saying, you know, well, this is us enforcing the rules. And it's just like, well, you're the one creating the riot. It's not the Occupy movement that's creating the riot. So it's really contradictory in their whole thing of, like, they're trying to be, you know, Occupy is being nonviolent, and the only violence that's happening is being brought to by the police when they dress up and knock people in the heads with batons and everything else. But it's so, I mean, they're, that stuff's going on, but I think Occupy is still being resilient, and it's sticking through, and it's staying stronger, and it's growing. And that's the thing, like, in the last couple of weeks too, myself, when with Occupy, there's some concern with different Occupies, at least the one here in Boston. There's some people who feel like this could end in a week, and I see it as like a snowball effect. It just started to roll, and it's just growing larger and larger and larger, and it's going to be very hard to stop this. And it's not something that we should be thinking as a short term. We should be thinking as a long term, and our goal should be long term here. And it kind of changes some of the ideas, because I remember when Adbusters came out, there was like this whole thing of, oh, at some point they will make a one demand, and that never really happened. It changed, because as you bring in more people, it becomes a bigger movement, and it's not just one demand, it's many. And I think Occupy, in a lot of ways, in my mind at least, can take on a different persona, in the sense that it, well, not even persona is the right word, because that makes it a person, but a different entity or idea, which is that it can be, as a movement, it can be a space for discourse and for all different organizations, whether you're for labor rights or if you're for environmental rights or against nuclear power or whatever, that you can come to Occupy, bring up your demands as an organization, as people, as a collective, or as individuals, and garner strength from the Occupy movements wherever you are, and take actions outside of that. So it's not necessarily Occupy making the demand, but the people that are coming there as the demand. So you don't ever have a head to cut off with Occupy, because if you start listing demands, you start building a face, you start building a head to it, and that there's something that they can come after and try to cut off. And I think there's a way that this Occupy movement can embrace things like Sparks and have, you know, not it's not seeing Occupy as a separate group, but Sparks coming to Occupy and Occupy becoming this bigger movement from it, and actions happening from it. But it's not just Occupy, it's inspired because of Sparks. So it's really a Sparks direct action, Sparks demands, you know. And it's just showing that by going through the Occupy movement, you gain strength, you gain power, and you gain a place to actually publicly talk about these things, instead of it being held to just the media. Because as you're saying, the media is not covering this stuff, which is very similar to Occupy itself. It's not very well covered by the media, but who expects it to be? When did the media ever cover anything well? You know, I can't think of anything that they've ever done well, but that's because of who they are run by and who owns them. But
yeah,
you know, it's, so, I mean, I think there's this growing entity within that can happen, and growing potential. I mean, we're, what, just over two months into the Occupy movement in the States, and since Occupy Wall Street happened, and already it's had so much influence. But
yeah,
I don't want to see it rushed. I don't want to see people rushing through this whole process. I think there's an opportunity to learn so much, and for so many different groups to come together to you know, to educate. So people back in 1999, the World Trade Organization, one of the monumental things was that labor unions were learning about environmental actions, and environmental action or groups were learning about labor rights, and they were working together on it, which was not something that had really happened before. And now it's like the same thing, but now it's even bigger, because, you know, we have a war, and you have anti-war folks, you have people who are against capitalism, you have people who are against, you know, who want regulations, you have people who want to just end the federal government or Federal Reserve. But they're all learning from each other about these bigger things that are part of it. And I think that's the monumental thing. It's an education. It's, well, an element.
I think we should aim for a permanent occupation.
That's
where it actually becomes a permanent feature of our life, and a totally new way of relating to each other and to the cities that we live in. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a tent city in the middle, you know, in the middle of every city forever, but that it becomes a new way to participate, and a new way to create democracy and to have public discourse. And, you know, like the existing system doesn't work. So let's bring everyone together in public spaces and try and figure out collectively how we can change things and what we can do to make them better.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to sum it up. And I think that's the thing that we've been missing in these so-called democracies, if we want to even call them democracies, is that there's too much of a reliance, at least in the States, on just voting and stopping there. And now it's finally people are alive and realizing that, you know, it doesn't just take a vote to actually make anything happen. It's a matter of being bigger than that and making something larger than that. And, you know, exercising these movements and bringing them to fruition makes it creates another avenue for political action to happen. And it's not supporting any political party. And I think that's the best part, is that there is no party politics in the situation. There's a distaste for both parties, at least in the States, because we're only two parties here. And it's a matter that we don't want to be a pedestal for political parties to exist. It's just a matter that these are the issues that need to be heard, and these are the this is the way they're going to be expressed, and mm-hmm. you're not going to have to rely on a state representative that only represents whoever voted them in the states, and to actually exercise everything else. It's at least inspiring in the U.S. because we've never had this activism. Or we had, it's not that we never had it. The last time we had it was the 1960s, and that was way too long ago. And now it's actually coming to a different idea of making this, as what you're saying, permanent, makes it stronger, and it again just makes the movement more influential on the system that we're trying to change. And I think that's the best part about it.
So Sparks for the win.
Yeah.
Up the Sparks.
I think that covers the our main topic here today. Is there any feedback you wanted to go over?
Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
Yeah, actually two. One of them is that cyber unions is mentioned in an ACAS briefing. ACAS is the Advisory Conciliation and Arbitration Service. It's created by the UK government but governed independently by a board, and it looks at good practice for employee relations. So it's used a lot by HR professionals as well as by union people to talk about also, you know, what's considered good practice in employment relations. And they released a briefing on social media in the workplace and what unions should do and what employers should do. And they quoted from cyber unions, and they also listed it as a recommended site. So that was encouraging.
Nice, nice. That's very good. And I saw a lot of the links coming from there to our site, which is really cool.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, just 5 minutes before we started recording the show, I got an email from Albert Muyembe of the Professional Teachers Union of Zambia, which sounds like it's a new grassroots teachers union that's just started in Zambia, and they're looking for assistance and advice in how they can use technology to organize. So I'm going to get back in touch with him and see if we can provide some kind of support to their union.
That's great. That's really encouraging to see. And there's a lot of inspiring things that have been happening. And if I could add one thing, I don't think I actually brought this up, was that there was some feedback that we got from some union members down in DC that were regular listeners after our 25th episode that are hearing and listening and looking for us for advice too. So I think that we need to actually start putting together our resource page for all these unions that are starting to look for some advice for us, so we can actually point them to some good building constructive places. So I think we're going to start putting that together in a more constructive sense then. Probably after we get everything moved over, we could start building that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's great. Well, and I think the show and the site is building in both an influence listeners and what we can do to try to change and make things more constructive and more community driven.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything else you want to go over?
No, I think that will do for today.
Great. Then I will see you next week, hopefully, if I don't lose it before then.
Yeah. Enjoy the football.
Yes, go Liverpool. See you all next week.
Cheers.